When you're riding after rattlesnakes, you've got to be tough. You've got to be rough. You've got to shoot straight. Be on the lookout. The James Gang is back in town, and they're meaner than ever. There's Brother Eli. He stomped down many a snake in his day, and he ain't done yet. His younger brother Dave, quicker than a horned toad, he can hunt down a snake's lie. Then there's Sister Jean. She can whip out a scripture faster than a Colt 45. Wanted, dead or alive, they'll be coming for you. It's the James Gang on GearFolkRadio.com.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is One-to-One on GearFolk Radio, and we're riding after Talmud snakes.
Yeah, and we'll be coming for you.
Yeah, we'll be coming for you, you Talmud snakes. Folks, it's in one sense, David, it's a pleasure to see that the world is finally waking up to Jewish lies and seeing the Jews for what they really are, right? It's only people who watch Talmud Vision 24/7 who still believe that the Jews are Israel and that we should be supporting Israeli in the Middle East. You know, it's really amazing. But people are becoming sick of mass media, which is something that's tremendously in our favor, Okay. So let me just say for this morning or for today's show, and we're going to be talking what is the title you want to give today's shows? I know you want to talk about Hitler and World War II and or Winston Churchill and World War II.
Mr. Churchill, the not so great. Something to that effect. In other words, because this man is touted as a great man and a great historic figure, and he's a piece of garbage.
Yes, he is, yeah. How about Winston Churchill, the true architect of World War II?
Because everybody, if you want to be more, be specific. That doesn't denigrate him, but that's okay. We'll take care of that during the show.
Yeah, it will snakeify Winston Churchill during the process of the show, right? But right now, I want to quickly. I'd like to quickly summarize our last show, David, if that's okay with you.
And fine with me. Yeah,
yeah
it's your show.
Yeah. Well, but yeah, you picked the theme about World War II and the demonization of Adolf Hitler, which has been the theme of our last few shows. Okay, so I'm going to be quoting here from the Right to Bear Arms. This is actually a, and I put that in the Skype link for you to read there, ironlight.wordpress.com. It's actually an article here by Dr. William Pierce. I don't know if we have an audio recording of this, but it summarizes the situation. This is the false claim that Adolf Hitler banned guns. You often hear, in fact, one of my favorite bumper sticker posters is "All in favor of gun control, raise your right hand." Right, and so you have Stalin, you have FDR, you have Dianne Feinstein, and usually they add Adolf Hitler, but it's a lie. Adolf Hitler did not ban guns. Okay, so from this article, these are the words of the head of the. What was his group?
I think it's the White Alliance.
White Alliance, yeah, the White Alliance. So Dr. William Pierce is speaking for the White Alliance. National Alliance. That's it. The National Alliance.
Does that mean if it's national, it's evil, or if it was white, it was evil, or
if it's a white alliance, it's
anything
evil.
That you know, right? Yeah. If it was the Jewish socialist, it'd be wonderful.
Yeah,
and it would
there
be
you
full
go. That'd be communist. Amen. Amen. Or here's what he has to say, which kind of summarizes our last show, in which we identified the British Empire under the control of the Rothschilds as having set up the nation of Poland against Germany, and setting Poland up and not living up to its agreements, its promises that it made to Poland, that it would protect Poland. In fact, what happened was the Rothschilds and Britain supported the communists under Stalin, who attacked Poland at the same time that the Nazi Germany attacked. And Britain never fulfilled its promise to protect Poland. Never. Okay? So it's obvious that Poland was set up to take a fall and to use Poland to start World War II. Okay? Here's what Dr. Pierce says. Unfortunately, for those who would like to think Hitler and the National Socialists with gun control, the entire premise for such an effort is false. German firearms legislation under Hitler, far from being banning private ownership, actually facilitated the keeping and bearing of arms by German citizens by eliminating or ameliorating restrictive laws which had been enacted by the governments preceding his, a left-center government which had contained a number of Jews. In other words, the Weimar Republic. Okay? So it was the Weimar Republic which restricted gun ownership, and Hitler repealed a lot of those laws. So it's an absolute opposite of what you're being told by the Jews. Hitler did not oppose gun ownership by private citizens. He continues.
Do we see?
Yeah,
do
go
we
ahead.
See the anything like that going on right now?
Oh yeah, right. Yeah, Jews in
all
America,
of a sudden, all kinds of things are being repealed now.
Yeah, yeah. Jews are trying
that
to take
Donald
our guns
Trump
away.
Is, yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Pierce no, I mean, that now that Donald Trump is in, mm-hmm. all of a sudden he's repealing all those things that they put in to...
Oh, are you suggesting he's doing like what Hitler did?
Yes, I am suggesting that exactly.
How
and
dare you?
I find it very interesting. That,
it is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Are those libtards correct in suggesting that Donald Trump is a Nazi? The interesting thing is that, yeah, history is repeating itself. Is it not? Okay. Dr. Pierce continues, it is not just that the National Socialist firearms legislation was the opposite of what it has been claimed to have been by persons who want to tar modern gun grabbers with the Nazi brush. The whole spirit of Hitler's government was starkly different from its portrayal by America's mass media, that is, Jewish media. The facts in brief are these, quote, the National Socialist government of Germany, unlike the government in Washington today, did not fear its citizens. Adolf Hitler was the most popular leader Germany has ever had. Unlike American presidents, he did not have to wear body armor like the Pope and have shields of bulletproof glass in front of him wherever he spoke in public. At public celebrations, he rode standing in an open car as it moved slowly through cheering crowds. Communists made several attempts to assassinate him, and his government stamped down hard on communism, virtually wiping it out in Germany. Between upright, law-abiding German citizens and Adolf Hitler, however, there was a real love affair with mutual trust and respect. Okay? And then he just goes on to say that target practice, fencing, and other martial arts were very popular in National Socialist Germany, and basically saying that the gun registration and licensing and restrictions were started by the Weimar Republic, and Hitler began a process of undoing the Weimar Republic when he came to power, which is what we were saying. The whole motivation behind Hitler invading Poland was to undo the crimes of the Versailles Treaty. Over to you.
Oh, well, I would say that, you know, it's very interesting that people want to believe that they try to insinuate that Hitler's regime was a totalitarian regime
yeah.
that took away all the rights of the people, brainwashed the people into believing everything that the state wanted it to believe, which is what communism is. And it's exactly the opposite of that. It has nothing to with any of those things. As a matter of fact, there was more freedom in Germany than there's been in any country of the world. America's never known, I don't think, that kind of freedom. Imagine freedom to know that you had your own people that loved you around you. Imagine the freedom that you could ride down the street and stand up in the car and not worry about anybody wanting to kill you because they were all for you.
Right.
Imagine the freedom of, you know, being in step with the nation, being in step with your race. There's nothing better than that. The liberty that's produced by obeying the laws of Yahweh is the true liberty. So I don't think America, you may wish to argue, or some may wish to argue. Of course, they would argue because they would believe the opposite. But I would say that Germany was the freest country probably ever in the modern era.
Right. I agree. Just one more quick quote here. Again, the firearms law enacted by Hitler's government enhanced the rights of Germans to keep and bear arms. No new restrictions were added, and many pre-existing restrictions were relaxed or eliminated. At the end of the Second World War, American GIs in the occupying force were astounded to discover how many German civilians owned private firearms. Tens of thousands of pistols looted from German homes by GIs were brought back to the United States after the war as war booty, folks. In 1945, General Eisenhower ordered all privately owned firearms in the American occupation zone of Germany confiscated, and Germans were required to hand in their shotguns and rifles, as well as any handguns which had not already been stolen. All right, so this lie that has been perpetuated by the Jew press that Hitler opposed private ownership of guns is a lie, folks. Absolute lie. Okay?
Well, once again, when we're involved in the action, the freedom is lost.
That's right. That's right.
Sorry, I have to call it the way it is. And any of you that are thinking that in this series, you're believing that we're speaking anti-American or that we hate America, you are severely, severely mistaken. We love America. We don't love anybody controlling our country. We want them out of
Jews.
Our country.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with America. America is under a control, and that's what we don't like.
That's right, under Jewish control, just as the Weimar Republic was under Jewish control, and Hitler cleared that up, right? That's why Hitler is so demonized, because he got rid of Jewish control of Weimar Germany, right? That does not make us un-American.
Yeah, they didn't. They didn't want the other nations of the world to see the greatness of Germany at that time, and they did not want them to see what it means to have the Jews out of your country.
Yeah,
you know, because look what happened when the Jews went out of their country. I mean, not only economically did they rise from the bottom to the top, and within 4 short years, that just shows the whole world what happens if you get Jews out of your country.
That's right.
They did not want the world to see that.
Right, because other countries would have followed suit. Right, the Jews could not abide that. That's why the Jews declared economic war on Germany in 1933. That famous headline, Judea declares war on Germany. Samuel Untermeyer, Rothschild agent, was the one who enunciated that entire plan of, again, boycotting German goods, a policy which had been in place since the Versailles Treaty, which resulted in the massive starvation deaths of many Germans. And, of course, the Polish genocide of ethnic Germans in the Danzig corridor. So this is one annihilation of the German people after another by Jewish orchestrated policies. And yet the Germans have been portrayed as evil beings by the Jew-controlled press ever since. It's quite amazing. It's quite amazing. All right, now I want to switch over to GermanVictims.com. Which again offers a really good summary of what we were talking about, how the Jews manipulated Poland. The Jews, through the British government, manipulated Poland into getting into World War II. And here is what the German Victims has to say. That's under the title of Poland Started and Planned World War II. The question arose as to how the Polish government could allow such a dangerous sentiment to develop in the country to, and to such an extent that is anti-German sentiment, and to such an extent as to permit her own citizens of German origin to be surrendered to the lowest class of Polish degenerates, whose very lust for murder made them ignore constitution, law, morality, and humanness. Well, it's because there were a lot of Jews involved in instigating the Polish people against the Germans there. Furthermore, how could responsible Polish rulers allow themselves to be maneuvered deeper and deeper into a condition of irreparable tension with Germany without accounting to state or people for the inevitable consequences of an armed conflict with Germany? Okay, so the question is, David, how is it possible that the nation of Poland could have allowed itself to be constantly antagonized against Germany, a country which shared a long border, and actually countenance a potential war with Germany? How is this possible? Well, it was not in Polish interest. It was not in the interest of the Polish people for such a war to happen. It was only in the interest of internationalists who could sacrifice both Poland and Germany to ultimately Russian, that is, Soviet occupation. Right, which is the inevitable outcome of World War II. Over to you.
Well, here's, you want me to answer the question?
Yeah.
Some of our people were discussing under our video, and they believe that Poland is more Jewish than we think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's, of course, you know, they've always been aggravating the Germans. There's always been somebody trying to cause a division between these two. As you said, even before it was Poland, and we think we know who that is, of
right.
course. And a lot of these people that come, you know, remember Mike and Gloria with Archie Bunker?
Right.
Well, Mike
okay.
was Polish.
Right.
You know what I mean? But he was, in reality,
Jew.
He's a Jew.
Right.
But,
he's
you know,
a Polish
like, I
Jew.
Find that to be very interesting.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
That is very interesting.
But yes, this is amazing because the article I brought into this thing that we'll get to is going to show you the view right from the guy named Kat. His middle name is Kat, and he's from
mm-hmm.
Poland, and he
right.
tells you what happened. You see, what happened in this whole situation is that they told Poland to keep aggravating Germany and not to worry because they would be protected once Germany
yeah.
you know, was prodded enough and would come into the war.
Right.
So, you know, that's the whole thing about the protection element. So they were just waiting, and they just had these Poles aggravating the German citizens in those areas. And Hitler kept hearing about it. And finally, you know, just like I said, you keep poking somebody
right.
long enough, and they're going to have to do it. You just have to remember what I said last week is that Germany was on a high at this point. They were – everything was going great in Germany. Everybody got their businesses back. Everybody had jobs. Nobody was eating out of the garbage cans. The nation was in step. They were on a super high.
Right.
There was no reason to go to war whatsoever.
Economic miracle.
As a matter of fact, that would be the last thing you'd want to do, really.
Right. Hitler had created an economic miracle by getting Germany out of the Great Depression that the rest of the world was still in. Okay. Why? Because he got rid of the Jewish bankers. All right. That's why.
Yes.
It's just that
that's
simple.
Why.
Okay. Let me continue here because this is really an excellent summary. The answer, why would Poland allow itself to be antagonized against Germany? The answer to this leads to the second force which influenced Poland from the outside and allowed Poland to believe that all further consideration towards the German minority or the Reich could be dropped. This force was England, was the guarantee of assistance given by the British government to Poland and the British active influence to use Poland as a pawn, which is what we were saying in our shows about the Versailles Treaty, history's most terrible peace. The British active influence to use Poland as a pawn to stimulate the British encirclement policy so thoroughly as to kindle the fires of war. A war which had been prepared long beforehand and was intentional and which actually broke out in connection with Danzig and the Corridor. As England was guaranteeing this diabolical scheme, Warsaw was of the opinion that no moderation or consideration of action as to avoiding overdoing anything was necessary. Why? Because they believed the British lies that they would protect Poland. England had guaranteed the integrity of Poland. The British promise of assistance to Poland had provided the latter with the role of a political battering ram. Since then, and conscious of this, Poland had permitted herself to challenge the Reich in every conceivable way, and in her delusions even dreamt of a victorious battle before the gates of Berlin. Could it be any clearer, David, that we have proven that Poland was set up to take the fall by Britain and, of course, the Rothschilds who controlled Britain at that time?
Yes, but let's not forget, even as it says later in this article, it says America is definitely involved in this. And this scumbag Roosevelt or Rosenbelt or whatever you want to say his real name is, he had promised the same way Woodrow Wilson. This is just a reminder. We will not get your sons in the war. It was the exact cry as Woodrow Wilson. And Woodrow Wilson, of course, got our sons into the war. And so it says later in this article here, the efforts of Roosevelt and American Jewry to trigger World War II. As long as the government of Germany does not allow the truth to come forth as to who is at fault of World War II, Germany will never be restored as a full member partner. Mm-hmm. Now, you know what that means, a full member partner of what, ladies and gentlemen?
Yeah, right.
Oh, of the League of Nations that right? seemed to, you know, that nobody knew about. I didn't know that we had a UN in place before the UN.
Right.
I know that the Tsar in 1815, as we have talked about, had shut that down. But I didn't know that the Versailles Treaty until last week or the week before. Mm-hmm. We found out that the Versailles Treaty starts out establishing the League of Nations. And Germany is the one that quit the League of Nations.
Right.
Just before the war, as I saw a little before. So that's what he's talking about, a full member partner. So let me just go on a little. Yeah. World War II is not Germany's fault. It is the fault of the Allies. Roosevelt was determined to lead the Americans into war, and this even though Germany had not at the slightest threatened the U.S. Germany ignored the attacks of Roosevelt on German ships as to not give Roosevelt any reason to accuse Hitler of wanting war, because Hitler knew that this is what Roosevelt wanted, war. Roosevelt explained, "It was our aim to maneuver the Japanese into firing the first shot." Now, this is his own words, right?
Yes, right. It's a quotation, yeah.
Yeah, Oliver Littleton, Littleton said in his speech before the American Chamber of Commerce in London, "America has so provoked the Japanese that the Japanese were forced to attack Pearl Harbor." Now, just see what he admitted there is exactly what they did with Poland. Poland was doing that to Germany. Mm-hmm. Poland was provoking Germany and forced Germany to attack them.
Yeah, exactly. So we can see now the behind-the-scenes political maneuvering of the Rothschilds using the Polish government, using Churchill, we'll get to Churchill momentarily, and Roosevelt. And Roosevelt absolutely knew, that the Japanese were going to attack Pearl Harbor, did not inform Admiral Kimmel at Pearl Harbor, and allowed Pearl Harbor to be a sitting duck. A sitting duck. Go ahead.
May I continue a little on this?
Yes.
Because there's some more quotes while we're here. "After this happened, the American public wanted war. Roosevelt knew to the day and hour of the attack on Pearl Harbor, and as the Americans had deciphered the Japanese codes. But he did nothing on purpose. He wanted it. He even went on vacation." Oh, really? "He even went on vacation to make it look like he had no idea. The whole Pacific fleet was destroyed and 30,000 American soldiers and civilians lost their lives." "To get to the Morgenthau Jew war against Germany on the road." See, now this is that Morgenthau Jew who put out the Morgenthau plan as
well. Exactly.
Roosevelt had 30,000 American citizens killed. Roosevelt's wife said that she had not seen her husband as happy as that in a long time when he heard of the horrible attack on Pearl Harbor.
Right.
During the re-election, understand, he's happy that the
30,000 Americans
American citizens killed.
This Jew. Rosenfeld.
Only a Jew would be happy at that.
Exactly.
The rest of the American people were mad, right? It said.
Right. Yeah. Total manipulation.
So let me just finish this part.
Yes.
During the re-election in October 1941, Roosevelt said, "I've told you mothers and fathers earlier, but I want to repeat it again and again. Your sons will not be sent into the foreign wars." So the whole world of Jewry pushed all of the Western powers into a war against Germany. The repeated war declarations by Jewry against Germany and the horror propaganda against Germany was so intense and so expansive that Chancellor Hitler said on 31st January 1939, "If the Jews will succeed in pushing people into a world war, the result will be that the Jews will be destroyed." Too bad at what didn't happen.
Right.
But it would have happened if America didn't go into the war.
That's right. It would have. But of course, since the Jews were in total control of American politics, they were able to bring America into World War II, just as Woodrow Wilson brought America into World War I. Exactly the same lies were told by Roosevelt as were told by Wilson. They're both their campaign re-election promises were, I kept your boys out of the war while they were planning the war, even saying that.
Amazing, is it not? Mm-hmm. And the trickery worked twice. It worked with two different guys.
Twice.
I want to mention one thing about the Dick Act when you were reading that this morning. I didn't hear the part where it says that the Dick Act encouraged the citizens of America who are all the militia to purchase as many weapons and encouraged the citizenry to have as many weapons as they could afford.
Right.
Not only that, but it was in Taft's time that the Dick Act was made, which I didn't even realize. Mm-hmm. So here he is again. Taft, who they didn't want in. They wanted to put Woodrow Wilson in. Remember the story.
That's correct.
They brought Teddy in on the third party. They didn't want have. If Taft had gone into presidency, there would have been not only no Federal Reserve, but there would have been no First World War until that's later time.
That's right. Much later, and America would have not gotten involved in it. Okay. Because Wilson was a Jew stooge, just as Roosevelt was a Jew stooge. Okay. Folks, I hope you're beginning to appreciate the history lessons we're providing here on One-to-One on EuroFolkRadio.com. Okay. All right. So, David, I think we've proved to all the listeners that World War I and World War II were creations of the international Jew banksters manipulating the governments of Britain and America to all they were worth and basically taking their venom out on the German people, a people who had been very good to the Jews in the previous century.
Absolutely.
Right?
But not only that, we've proven that it's been said that Hitler started World War II. That's an absolute lie.
That's right.
It has been said that the Allies, the good side of the war, was Russia, America, and the UK and France. That's a lie. We just showed you that not only did Japan not want to go into the war and was provoked to go into the war by the so-called good people.
Right, the good Jews.
But Germany wanted nothing to do with war, and there was no reason why Germany would want to be going to war, but it was done the same way against them, and they were prodded and prodded until they would come into the war.
Yes.
And this division that was caused in World War I was the tool they used to do it. Because when they took Germany's land for no reason, Germany didn't lose World War I.
That's right.
They took some of those lands, and Germans are living in Poland now, where they can be easily had access to and aggravated and tortured and killed and everything else.
Yeah.
We also proved the lie, which I knew was a lie anyway, and I've talked about it many times, that gun control in Germany, that Hitler wanted to take all the guns away from the people because they didn't trust the German citizens. That's a total absolute lie. You're listening to Jews. You're listening to fables of the Jews. And anytime you listen to the Jews, I don't know what it is with you people, our people. I don't know why when we tell you the truth, you want to jump at us and fight us tooth and nail. But when, if the Jew tells you, told you these same things,
an absolute
you'd
lie.
Believe him without even a question. Even a question in your mind.
Well, this just proves, David, that propaganda works. If you have total control of the media and repeat the lie a million times, people eventually begin to believe the lie. And there's no doubt that the Jews control America's media, European media, Australian media, Canadian media, European media, etc., etc. Okay?
Well, let me ask you this question. When you were a child, when I was a child, I saw this Hitler on TV. And he was... looked like he was ranting and raving, and I was told that he was the most evil man on earth and that he was talking about killing the Jews all the time. But now that I'm able to read the speeches of Hitler, I don't find anywhere in there where he's talking about killing all the Jews. And find anywhere.
Never. Well, see, David, I had an unusual upbringing. My mother admired Adolf Hitler, and she hated Jews. So I was never subject to this Jewish programming that most Americans and most Europeans are subject to. Okay? So I never had to unlearn the lies of the Jews. All right? Okay? So I'm extremely fortunate in that regard.
Well, but you saw it for yourself. I'm sure you saw the same things I saw.
Oh,
and, I believed that he was evil. I thought, like, geez, that this must be a man that's possessed with demons, and his tongue, he had this special demonic, way to, fool all these Germans. See, I didn't know anything about it. See, I challenge you, ladies and gentlemen, I challenge you to read Mein Kampf. And I challenge you to either get the book that shows all of Hitler's speeches in English, Andy's talked about it, or I challenge you to go out and find the speeches of Hitler and read them for yourself. And when you come back to me after, I want you to see if you tell me that you think this guy is anything but brilliant.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No doubt. It reminds me, as my mother was teaching me the truth about the Jews as a little boy, I was reminded, I'm reminded now of a little episode I had at the corner store right across the street from our house, Dickens and Kenmore in Chicago. It's a candy store, a five and dime. And I was standing there, I forget what I was buying, and two Jewish women, exquisitely dressed, were standing there at the counter, and over the radio was an announcement that the Germans had instituted a Holocaust policy against Jews, and we're rounding them up and gassing them to death. And the one Jewish woman said to the other Jewish woman, it's etched in my memory and it'll never be erased, if I had known that, I would never have gotten on the train. So this was the first this was the first she had ever heard of a Jewish or German extermination policy against Jews. She said right there, if I had known that, I would have never gotten on a train. Obviously, she survived the gassing, didn't she? Right?
What's more interesting about that, though, Eli, is that if these listeners would go out and research, they would find out, look up the 6 million before Hitler.
Right.
You'll find out that in all kinds of newspapers, before Hitler was even in in power, they were talking about 6 million Jews in Russia that were being tortured and starved to death.
Yes.
And then it translated to Europe, and this is still before Hitler.
Right.
They were talking about 6 million Jews, and these are in New York newspapers, of course, the same old, New York Compost and all the rest of them. You know what I mean? It's they were saying how 6 million Jews in Europe were being starved. I don't know how they changed. All 6 million of them went from being starved and tortured in Russia, and they all somehow got to Europe, and there was 6 million there being starved and
There's
tortured.
There's always 6
and
million,
this is before
right?
Hitler.
It's
is
always
even...
6 million. It's incredible. Right.
There's a lot of Jews there. You know?
Yeah, right. I mean, they keep reproducing so that 6 million more can be Holocausted, right? Well, there's a Holocaust coming, folks, the real Holocaust. And it's called the burning of the tares in Matthew chapter 13. All right. But we're trying to educate the world through your folk radio as to the lies of the Jews, the reality of Hitler's Germany, and how it was a break from Jewish dominance and Jewish torture of the German people. Okay? That's how you have to understand the rise of Hitler. It was because of the Versailles Treaty, history's most terrorist peace, that Hitler came into being. If the Jews had not created the terrorist state of the Weimar Republic, which was a terrorist state against the German people, then no Hitler would have arisen. But if you, as you like to refer to, if you poke the pig long enough, or the dog, or the lion, or the cat will finally attack you. And that's what the Jews were doing to the German people, and the German people eventually fought back.
May I remind you, too, that in this statement, he says this. This is a reminder now that Hitler tried to peacefully... Mm-hmm. Try to stop this war. Try to stop it before it started. And it says right here, again, Hitler made very reasonable demands on Poland. Professor Hogan, Harvard University, I guess this is before it was laden with Jews.
Right.
Germany offered Poland a guarantee. Germany did not want any Polish territory, just a corridor for a train and autobahn, and the return of the city of Danzig, 97% German, to Germany. Hitler tried to negotiate with Poland until the last days before he returned fire. But Poland had already decided in March of that year to have no real talks with Hitler due to British...
Yeah, Jewish.
Finagling.
Right.
Yes, Jewish. Exactly what it means. Mm-hmm. In other words, it's just like the end of the war. I want to remind you again about Germany's diplomacy. Remember that Germany had, it was 2 weeks before the end of World War II, and the British had about 2 weeks food left. Germany said, let's just forget about it. We don't want any reparations. We're just going to turn around and go home now. And we want you to do the same. Well, this same so-called British finagling would not allow the end of the war.
Yes.
Not that way. They would not allow Germany to go home because they wanted to make sure they took some of Germany's land. They wanted to make sure that they, made sure that they had this thing so they could start. They knew they were going to start World War II on the heels of World War I.
They needed a pretext, yeah. Well, but the pretext was provided by an obedient Polish aristocracy. Obedient, it's even more than obedient. It is a duped Polish aristocracy which believed the lies of the Jew-inspired British government. And said, oh, okay, well, Britain, a very powerful country, will protect us against Germany. Yeah, right. Okay. So when you believe Jewish lies, that's what happens, folks. Your country will be destroyed if you believe Jewish lies.
May I say this, too, that Hitler was blamed, the people blame him for him and Himmler. They say that they were trying to destroy Christianity in Germany, which is absolutely a lie,
a
falsehood. See, the reason why Germany had to be taken down, even in World War I, why this happened is because they were friends with the Ottoman Empire, and they would protect them if somebody tried to get that little land that they wanted over there. But number two, Germany was the last bastion in Europe. Mm-hmm. See, the Jews controlled Moscow. The Jews controlled France. The Jews controlled the UK. The Jews controlled the USA. the Jews did not control totally Germany. Yes, they had a good seat in their government, and they did some damage in the Weimar. That's when the real control came. Right. But they had to take Germany down because it was the last bastion, the last country that could protect Europe against the Jew.
Right, right.
And so also it was the taking down of Christianity.
Right. Let me read the next four paragraphs, which are very brief, because this really tells the story. The fault of the war between Germany and Poland lies with Poland, and the fault of the World War lies with England, primarily. Of course, the Rothschilds in control of Britain in these times. Halifax declared about Hitler, quote, "Now we have forced him into war, and he no longer can correct the Versailles Contract piece by piece." Is that a telling admission or what? Polish General Sosnowski declared on 31 August 1943, "The decision by Poland on 30 August 1939 designated a change in the history of Europe. Hitler was with this put before the necessity to have war at a time when he wanted nothing but non-bloody conquest." Well, he wanted to undo the Versailles Treaty, the evils of the Versailles Treaty. Historian Professor Taylor at Oxford, in his book The Cause of the Second World War, 1961, brings a blow against the war fault lie. Quote, Professor E. Barnes describes the whole pre-war history in his report, How Roosevelt Forced World War II. Starting with Roosevelt's talk in Chicago on October 4, 1937, until his official entry into the war on 7 December 1941, it describes how Roosevelt switched to war after his disastrous economic policy. Quote, "War and mobilization will be the means with which we can stop the Depression," unquote.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Sounds like a Jew to me. But you know what's very fitting about Mr. Roosevelt is that he was – we just heard here. Now, you heard that. I didn't even know that. That she said his filthy wife, Eleanor, who's a lesbian and a hater, remember that her dream was the day that America would have only brown people walking on the sidewalks, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. She said he was happiest when he found out 30,000 American citizens and just so you'll know, and military men died. He was never more happy. So it was very fitting that this man was in a wheelchair. Number one, he didn't take that message, of course, because Jews don't take any messages like that. Most men that were in a wheelchair would be humbled by that and would be like, I better not, you know, do anything, you know, I better keep myself, you know, together, you know, I shouldn't be happy about people dying, like, unless, you know, he's happy because they're his enemy. So when I'm happy about Jews dying, it's only because I'm happy about they're my enemy.
Right.
But he's supposedly the same people, right? He's supposed to be, these are his own people, so to speak. So he died during this war, or right at the end of the war, which is very fitting for this filthy Jew.
That's right. That's right. Again, folks, we are reading from www.germanvictims.com. Poland started and planned World War II. Okay, so the truth is coming out about World War II. The Jewish control of mass media is declining, precisely as we have been saying, David, that as the economy declines, Jewish control of the media declines because they don't have the advertising revenue to keep promoting their lies. And eventually, when the economy totally collapses, then all the people that they have hired to tell lies on their behalf will come out. They will no longer be paid prostitutes, and they will come out and tell the true story of what really happened, right, in World War II, in Germany, in America, in Poland, in Russia, in Britain, et cetera, folks. The truth is coming out.
What about techniques of the media? Let's just talk about that for a second before we go to other things.
Mm-hmm.
I want to remind you of something yesterday, and I want to remind you of something today. Remember what Ms. Haverbeck talked about, how they cut the hands off the little children in Belgium to prevent them from growing up to be soldiers? Remember that the Germans were throwing infants back and forth on the bayonets of their rifles?
Mm-hmm.
Well, And we found out that none of that's true, of course. We found out that it was really the Jews who did those things, and I'm not going to tell you about that again right now. But I will remind you, back in the Iraqi war, there was a false actor who we found out she was just an actor.
Yes.
She was crying on the media, if you'll remember this. This is not that long ago. And she was saying that the Iraqis were throwing babies off the incubators onto the floor something to that.
Right.
Do we remember that?
That was a lie. Another lie.
Do we remember that?
Yeah, I remember.
So I wonder when we're going to find out where the Jews actually were doing this, throwing babies off onto the floor. Maybe probably in the abortion clinics. But we'll find out eventually in the future.
Yes.
Where these Jews were throwing babies off the floor, off the incubators onto the floor, because they only accuse other people of what they do.
That's right. That's right. Again, history is nothing but Jewish lies. Right? Right? You can quote me on that, folks. Pastor Eli James, history is nothing but Jewish lies. Back to you, David.
But notice the technique. The technique. I want you to realize this because they're even doing this today again. The technique is you're not paying attention. I know. I'm not saying anybody's stupid, but listen. They said they cut the hands of children off.
Right.
They said they were taking children, infants, and throwing them back and forth. They said they were throwing children off the incubators, little babies. See, the Jews like to work on your emotions in every way to manipulate you, but they're using children in these cases because that is the thing that would move people the most. Even men would be moved
it's
by
propaganda,
that.
Jewish propaganda. Even ex-murderers would shed a tear over a story like that, right? But it's a lie, folks. It's a total lie. This is how Jews manipulate us. It's about time.
And so we went to war on that premise, things
That's
like
right.
that.
That's right. Okay, David, I'd like to move to an article, How Winston Churchill Sold Out Britain and Europe. And this is from the website europeanmediacenter.wordpress.com, How Winston Churchill Sold Out Britain and Europe. Now, it starts out by quoting, it quotes the entire article that Winston Churchill wrote in the 1920 edition of the Sunday Herald, in which Winston Churchill accurately describes Zionism and Bolshevism as Jewish constructs by which the Jews murder people and gain power over the rest of the world, right? Winston Churchill was brutally honest in this article about the Jews and their world empire. Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
I think this might be the very article that Mr. Mars talks about, how the Jews would bring forth not only the Christ, but they would bring forth the Antichrist, this wonderful race of Jews that Mr. Mars says they're wonderful. He says this wonderful, wonderful people who brought forth Jesus Christ. So Tex believes he's a Jew, and then they're also going to bring forth the Antichrist. See, he's so confused that he doesn't understand that they are the Antichrist.
That's right. They can't be Christ and Antichrist at the same time. I mean, he's totally befuddled.
I don't think this is the article, is it, though, Eli?
I don't think Tex Mars is involved in this article, but yeah, Tex Mars.
No, I don't mean Tex Mars. I mean, is this the article where Winston says that thing?
Well, it starts out by quoting the entire article of the London Daily Herald. Okay, I'm gonna scroll down to where it says a home for the Jews, and this really. Winston Churchill, without realizing it, elaborates the Jewish dialectic of creating a problem and then offering a solution and then resolving the crisis with a whole new paradigm, namely the Jew world order. Okay. All right. So, but the Jews posit both communism and Zionism, and the conflict between these two thesis, antithesis, synthesis is what? The Jew World Order, the United Nations. I'm just going to quote the last bit of Winston Churchill's article, A Home for the Jews. Zionism offers the third sphere into the political conceptions of the Jewish race, in violent contrast to international communism. Well, at this time in history, Zionism had not yet shown its violent colors. Okay? That was yet to come. So this is an accurate statement otherwise by Winston Churchill. Zionism has already become a factor in the political convulsions of Russia as a powerful competing influence in Bolshevik circles with the international communistic system. Nothing could be more significant than the fury with which Trotsky has attacked the Zionists generally and Dr. Weissman in particular. Now, of course, this is just a Jew. It's Jewish play acting. Jewish communists pretending to hate Jewish Zionists and vice versa. And at this point, Winston Churchill wasn't clever enough to figure this out. The cruel penetration of his mind leaves him in no doubt that his schemes of a worldwide communistic state under Jewish domination are directly thwarted and hindered by this new ideal. There it is, the thesis antithesis, all right? Thesis being communism, yep. Antithesis being Zionism. What's the result, David?
Jewry,
right, there you go.
No, it just really, really what it means is they're controlling both sides of the aisle.
That's
you know
right.
That, you know that the what do you call it, the Zionists take on the Orthodox rabbis, mm-hmm. and then they take on the Christians like Mr. Hagee.
Right? Yes.
They're the Zionists.
yes. This is a perfect example of the Jewish dialectic at work. Winston Churchill didn't even realize that he was explaining the Jewish dialectic. All right. Now, the author says, now having read that article written by Winston Churchill in 1920, ask yourself, why would he later turn full circle, team up with the Jewish Marxists, and start a war with the people fighting against this enemy that he had tried to expose and warn the world about? Why would Winston...
That's a good question.
Yeah. After
the honorable. I want you to know he's the honorable.
I'm sorry, folks. Yeah. We have to laugh. History is
it's
a joke.
It's like saying the honorable Bill Clinton. You know what I mean?
They
announce all these politicians and these judges when they come into the courts, the honorable.
That
makes you know that we're living in an upside down world because none of these people that are named as honorable are honorable whatsoever.
Amen. The reason that he gave for declaring war on Germany and starting World War II, this lays the start of World War II directly on Winston Churchill, was that Germany invaded Poland. What the schools and media do not tell us is that Russia had already invaded Poland from the east and were already in the process of this invasion before Germany entered Poland. Folks?
But what about Eli? What did we just read?
Yeah.
What did we just read? We just told you that the England and was telling Poland to aggravate Germany,
mm-hmm.
and that England...
They would protect Poland.
So here's the hypocrisy. Here's the
total hypocrisy,
what he just said right there. It's total hypocrisy.
Yeah. And as we've been saying, Poland was set up by the British under the control of the Rothschilds to antagonize Germany while they were using Russia to invade from the other side.
Right, but he's telling you how they didn't want to go into the war, and the only reason they went into the war was because Germany attacked Poland.
Right, well, that's the
excuse.
But they're
the ones that told told Poland, don't
that's
worry,
right.
we'll protect you. Just keep prodding them and prodding them until they enter the war, and then we'll save you.
You see how the telling of history...
You see the hypocrisy of these Jews?
The telling of history by the Jews, they mince words very, very carefully to leave out pertinent facts, such as the fact that British set Poland up for a fall by guaranteeing that Britain would protect Poland, which they never did. Never. Not even against the Soviet Union. Okay? Do you understand now, folks? This is why Nietzsche said the greatest export of the British Empire is cant, that is hypocrisy. The
Did
greatest
you sit down a little? Oh,
yeah, go ahead. I was just going to re-quote it. Go ahead.
Well, you had paused, so I was going to step in at that point.
Right.
I want you to see something because we hear John McCain. We just found out, this is not going off on a tangent, this is relevant to this right here. We just found out that six major senators are under George Soros's, you know, they're being
tutelage.
Paid by George Soros.
Right.
One of them just happens to be John McCain, which right? I'm sure you're all surprised
I'm
about.
I'm so surprised.
Then there's Marco Rubio and there's several others.
Right.
But here's the thing. You know that John McCain has been beating the war drums of Iran. So let me read you this because this is repeat of history again. It's the Jew behind it again. Remember that Mr. Soros is the invisible behind the visible, which are these six senators he's paying. Notice again how it's six senators.
Six.
It's by no chance. But listen to this.
Right.
The prime minister at the start of World War II was Neville Chamberlain, who did not want a war. Churchill, however, had for years been barracking Parliament, calling for a war on Hitler. Now, that does that not sound like McCain?
Right.
Now, all of a sudden, he's now the... Remember what Hitler's statement was last week? Remember he talked about that if Churchill or these two other gentlemen's names that he named got in, there will definitely
British
be
Hawks.
A war. He said
British
that.
Hawks,
remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, so he earned himself the reputation as a warmonger. Why?
Right.
Winston Churchill enjoyed a lavish lifestyle, for example, smoking expensive cigars and drinking a bottle of champagne for breakfast every morning, even during the war where British people were struggling with rationing. During his wilderness years, he had become bankrupt and as well as struggling to finance his luxury lifestyle.
Right.
He was about to lose Shartwell, his family's stately home. Between 1930 and 1939, he was financed by a slush fund emanating from a secret pressure group known as the Focus.
Yes.
Geez, I wonder who they were.
Right.
British historian David Irving
the Jewish
was investigated.
Focus, right?
Yes.
Go ahead.
British historian David Irving was investigated, and in his book on Churchill's War, details who the Focus group were and their arrangement with Churchill. I'd be interesting to know. I think it says here, it is right here.
Yeah.
Irving on Focus. The Focus was financed by a slush fund set up by some of London's wealthiest businessmen, principally businessmen organized by the board of Jewish deputies in England.
Jewish.
There's the invisible again. The invisible, and Churchill's the visible.
No, you're not supposed to say Jewish, David. No.
Yes, I know they're going to have to get rid of this video.
Right.
We want to tell you that YouTube is striking our channels now, so we don't know how long our channels will be around.
Right.
Because if you even say the word Jew now in America, it's a crime.
It's a hate crime to mention,
to
criticize Jews. It's a hate crime. But please continue. Yeah, this is very good.
Yeah, we don't really have to read any more of that. But anyway, we will. Okay, if you want. But
yeah.
We knew it was Jews anyway. We just wanted to prove it to you.
Right.
But anyway, so it was principally businessmen organized by the Board of Jewish Deputies in England, whose chairman was a man called Sir. He's a Mason. Bernard Whaley Cohen, which means priest
in Yiddish.
Sir Bernard Whaley Cohen held a private dinner party at his apartment on July 29th, 1936. This is why Whaley Cohen's memoirs, or this is in Whaley Cohen's memoirs. The 29th of July, 1936, Whaley Cohen set up a slush fund of £50,000 for the Focus.
That's a lot
of money.
The
Churchill Pressure Group. Now £50,000 in 1936, multiply that by 10 at least to get today's figures, by another 3 or 4 to multiply that into Canadian dollars. So 40 times £50,000 is about $2 million in Canadian terms, was given by Bernard Whaley Cohen to the secret pressure group of Churchill in July 1936. The purpose was, the tune that Churchill had to play was Fight Germany. Start warning the world about Germany, about Nazi Germany. See, this is before Churchill is even in office. Is that correct?
That's right.
Is
that what yeah, right. Yeah.
So he's. This is what Mr. Kane is. Mr. Mick Kane.
Right.
Mick Kane.
Right.
Get it, Kane.
Right. Mick there you go. Mm-hmm.
You see, he is now paid by Soros secretly.
Another Jew.
To war drums against Iran.
Right.
Do you see how yesterday is the same as today?
The Jews are repeating themselves yet again.
And what do they use to do that? Somebody in the background that has the money that puts the money forward. How do you think Black Lives Matter is doing what they're doing around the nation?
Right.
It's because George Soros is paying them.
That's right. So George Soros is today's version of Whaley Cohen, is what you're saying.
Just one of them.
Just one of them, yeah, right. Of course, there's more Jews involved than just George Soros, right? Okay, and then it ends.
The Coen brothers paying $2 million to make sure Donald wouldn't get into office, remember?
Right.
Right?
They
remember
lost
that?
Their bet.
Just recently?
Right. They lost their bet, didn't they? Right. Okay, so, and it continues. Churchill, of course, one of our most brilliant orators, a magnificent writer, did precisely that. He began demonizing Germany and Hitler.
Amazing.
These are the words of David Irving, okay, who rarely, is careful about criticizing the Jews and mentioning Jews. But in this case, he had to, because Sir Bernard Whaley Cohen was a Jew. Okay?
Yes, and he goes on to tell you later in this thing of Churchill's corruption. Churchill was corrupt as they come, of course, naturally. And, of course, when you're out of money and you like to live a lavish lifestyle, you've got to get that money. And the Jews are believers. I'm going to tell you about something real quick, something that Saul Alinsky is talking about in his book, something about the Freemasons always talk about, is that the ends justify the means with these people. It doesn't matter if you have to do criminal acts to get what you want accomplished. The ends justify the means only with these type of people, you understand?
Yeah.
The ends don't justify the means. If you're going to do evil things just to get what you want accomplished, that doesn't fly with Yahweh.
Mm, right. Please read the next paragraph. People have to know this stuff.
Okay.
The word
you
begins
want
with,
to, you want you
know, go ahead, for 2 years, that paragraph.
Okay. For 2 years, the focus continued to militate, in fact, right through until 1939, and I managed to find the secret files of the focus. I know the names of all the members. I know all their secrets. I know how much money they were getting, not just from the focus, but from other governments. I used the word other governments advisedly because of one of my sources on information for my Churchill biography is, in fact, the Chaim Weizmann papers.
Chaim Weizmann.
Oh, Chaim?
Yeah.
Chaim Weizmann papers in the state of Israel.
Ooh.
Israel has made... What?
Ooh.
Go ahead.
No. The state of Israel. Imagine that. I'm so surprised.
And where do they get their money to give money?
Right.
Oh,
yeah.
From the USA.
Yeah, U.S. taxpayer.
For reparations of other countries.
Yes.
So Chaim... Chaim Weizmann, all of his secret conferences. It is it's an astonishing thing, but I, despite my reputation, in a kind of negative sense with these people, am given access to files like that, just the same as the Russian government has given me complete access to all of the Soviet records of Churchill's dealings with Ivan Maisky, Joseph Stalin, Molotov, and the rest of them. I am the only historian who has been given access to these Russian records. It is a kind of horse trading method that I use when I want to access these files, because it is in these foreign archives we find the truth about Winston Churchill.
Hmm.
When you want the evidence about his tax dodging in 1949 and thereabouts, you are not only going to look in his own tax files, you're going to look into the files of those who employed him, like the Time Life Corporation of America.
Owned by Jews. It's owned by Jews. Yes.
Yes. That's where you look. And when you're looking for evidence about who was putting up the money for Churchill when he was in the wilderness and who was funding this secret group of his, the Focus, you're not going to have to look in his files. Again, you're going to look in the secret files, for example, of the Czech government in Prague, because that is where much of the money was coming from.
Okay, so Czechoslovakia is another creation of the Versailles Treaty. And we proved that the Jews were all over the Versailles Treaty, and the Jews were creating all of these fictitious nations which never existed before, some of whom they just created out of thin air, creating borders that never existed before, and Balkanizing Europe. All right? The Jews were in total control of the Versailles Treaty, and they were using the Versailles Treaty to as a prelude to World War II.
So that doesn't surprise you, does it,
Ian? No, that doesn't surprise me, right?
Does it surprise you about the six senators in America who are on the dole of George Soros?
Yes, yes.
When are they going to get this guy? When are they going to go get him? He's an international Jew. He's an international criminal. I hear right now that they are after him over in Europe or wherever he is, because he's not allowed to do business in Russia. He's now not allowed to do business in, I can't remember, there's a couple more countries. I would hope Iceland is one of them. But in other words, they're going to get him. I can't wait until they get this guy.
Yeah, now last week you talked about how Churchill was warned by Bernard Baruch, I believe it was.
That was Colonel Mandelhaus. They made sure that he didn't use the money in 1929.
But he was not given sufficient warning in a future crash. And this is where the Jews began to own Winston Churchill. It's in the next paragraph, if you would read that, please.
Oh, okay. I'm back. I'm here.
Yeah.
Irving then revealed further details of Churchill's financing by the Czechs, as well as the facts of Churchill's. See, when they say financing by the Czechs, that's not the Czech people.
You must
understand that.
Right.
Okay. It's somebody's got a control of their government.
Right.
Geez, I wonder who it might be.
Yeah. Don't say
as
that dirty
well
word.
As the facts of Churchill's financial rescue by a wealthy banker of Austro-Jewish origins, Sir Henry Strakosch, who, in Irving's words, emerged out of the woodwork, another Jew in the woodwork, woodpile, out of the woodwork of the City of London, that great pure international financial institution. When Churchill was bankrupted overnight by the American stock market crash of 1937 and 38,
I guess House was dead by this time.
maybe, but they saved him from the 29 one. That's
yes, they did.
I believe that was, I think that was Eustace Mullins that talked about that. I'm not exactly 100% sure because, I mean, how many things can you keep in your head all straightened out? I mean, so it was Strakosch who was instrumental in setting up the central banks of South Africa and India. Listen again, ladies and gentlemen, the central banks.
There you
that's
go.
The control mechanism. This Jew. He came out of the woodworks. He is instrumental in setting up the central banks of South Africa and India, who bought up all of Churchill's debts.
Yeah,
when Strakosch died in 1943, the details of his will published in the London Times included a bequest of £20,000 to the then Prime Minister, eliminating the entire debt.
They bought Churchill. Not that they didn't own him
he's
already.
A Jew, in the same way as they bought Woodrow Wilson,
that's
who was
right.
a Jew.
Yes. So, folks, are you beginning to understand the Jew in the woodwork? The Jew in the woodpile? The Jew lurking around behind the scenes, pulling the strings of the politicians who are very public and get all the credit or blame? When in fact it's the Jews in the background, just kind of like the Wizard of Oz, right? Behind the curtain, pulling the strings.
Well, it's just like Freemasonry with the so-called Illuminati is the secret society within the secret society. Well, that's the Jews. The Jews usually are almost always the invisible. Of course, in this case with Churchill, they're part of the visible. because they're kind of like dupes of the Jews. He was just a little old man. Churchill's the type of fellow who's an alcoholic, useless pig. So why not use them for your purposes? Because the Jews use their own. They don't mind killing off or, using their own people for purposes as well. They don't really, really love each other. They certainly hate all the rest of us, but they don't really care that much for each other either.
Yeah. Well, in the days of Wilson, it was blackmail, $40,000 blackmail of Woodrow Wilson by a person. The person is unnamed. However, it was the Jew, the same Jew who announced Judea declares war on Germany in 1933, okay, who paid.
Is that Morgenthau? Is he the one
who
paid
Morgenthau,
the debt?
No, not Morgenthau. Was it,
Felix Frankfurter?
No, I can't think of his name right now. But, if we have a sign of that newspaper, because he's holding up the sign of that newspaper in the photograph.
All right, while you're talking,
why don't you look that up? And it was $40,000 in the case of Woodrow Wilson because the blackmailer threatened to expose Woodrow Wilson's love affair with a married woman by the name of Mary Peck. All right? And it was this same Jew that David is trying to find his name that paid the money. All right? So in the same thing with Woodrow Wilson now occurred with Winston Churchill. A Jew pays the debts, which means the Jew owns him. Okay? The Jew owns you. All of these politicians, and this is how the Freemasons and the Jews work, they will compromise political leaders by setting up liaisons with prostitutes and what have you. And so they can use this, dirt on them to compromise them and manipulate them. Okay? This is how the Jews operate. So let me continue with the rest of the story. There's only a couple of paragraphs left here. Irving dealt with Churchill's performance as a wartime leader, first as Britain's first Lord of the Admiralty and then as Prime Minister. The British historian adverted to Churchill's great military defeat in Norway, which he himself engineered and pioneered, and mentioned the suspicion of Captain Ralph Edwards, who was on Churchill's staff at the time, that Churchill had deliberately caused the fiasco to bring down Neville Chamberlain and replace him as Prime Minister, which subsequently happened. Okay? So we know it was more than Churchill behind this. And the final paragraph here. For years, the West have been lied to by the education system and by the media, both controlled by Jews. Since World War II, these institutions and our governments have been in control of Marxist Zionist Jews and their lackeys like Churchill. Untermeyer, Samuel Untermeyer.
Ah, I remember that name now, yes. Of course, that's one of the names that always comes up in these things. These names even came up in the B.F. Jackson's pamphlet there, the names like, the exact same names. But I found, because of this, I found something interesting you might want me to read a little bit.
Okay,
Let me show you this while I'm reading, you may pick out some other things. This is just to show you what was going on in America, and I think this is very important. We want to still focus on Churchill, but you may wish to, while we're talking about the Declaration of Germany, I just want to give you a little hint. We can read some of this later, but do you have that?
Which document?
I just put it in Skype for you.
I don't see it. The last thing I see is all in favor of gun control. You sure you put it in the right chat? Maybe put it in a different chat.
Yep. I did. You're absolutely right because I had changed it. I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Boom. Right. Sorry about that.
Oh,
boom.
Okay. I see it now. Oh, okay.
Okay, listen to this now. I would just read because we don't want to go off on crazy, in another tangent, but this is all relative. Mm-hmm. The Express said that Germany was now confronted with an international boycott of its trade, its finances, and its industry in London, New York, Paris, and Warsaw. Poland again.
Uh-huh.
Jewish businessmen are united to go on an economic crusade. The article said worldwide preparations are being made to organize protest demonstrations. oh, geez, does that sound like anything happening today?
Yeah, right.
And reported that the old and reunited nation of Israel gets its inflammation with a new and modern weapons to fight out its age-old battle against its persecutors. This truly could be – what a lie. This truly could be described as the first shot fired in the Second World War. In a similar vein, the Jewish newspaper Nacha Retz wrote, "The war against Germany will be waged by all Jewish communities, conferences, congresses, by every individual Jew. Mm-hmm. Thereby, the war against Germany will be ideologically enliven and promote our interests, mm-hmm. which require that Germany be wholly destroyed." Are you listening, folks? Mm. The danger, see, every individual Jew, it says, it will be by every individual Jew. The danger for us Jews lies in the whole German people, in Germany as a whole, as well as individually. It must be rendered harmless for all time. In this war, we Jews have to participate, and this with all the strength and might we have at our disposal.
However, not your wretch.
However, note well that the Zionist Association of Germany put out a telegram on the 26th of March rejecting many of the allegations made by the National Socialists as propaganda, mendacious, and sensational.
Now, why would be? Let me just interject here because the fact is that the Zionists were trying to make a deal with the Germans to remove Jews out of Germany because they needed Jews to populate Palestine, okay?
Which Germany was doing.
It's right, okay? So the Germans were cooperating with the Zionists and moving Jews out of Germany, but then the Zionists and all these Jews had to backtrack and say, oh, no, wait a minute, we can't admit that. We have to promote this hoax that the Nazis were killing Jews, and that's why Jews were leaving. No, the Jews were leaving Germany because the Zionists wanted them to leave.
Yes, because they were going to destroy Germany with the hellfire after, right?
That's right.
Didn't want their Jewish people in Germany. They wanted to get them out of there because they knew that they were going to do a major Holocaust on the Germans after the war.
Right on the money. And by the way, next week we're going to talk about Dresden, the Dresden Holocaust. You said the magic word, hellfire.
That's what it is. That's what it's all about. As a matter of fact, from what I understand, one thing that Hitler did, if he couldn't get them over to, Jewland, that's what we ought to call it, Jewland,
right.
Israel. If he couldn't get them over that fast enough, he got them out of those cities that were going to be firebombed and put them on trains to the camps to protect them.
Yes.
That's what I've heard. Yeah. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but that shows you that it proves to you that he wasn't trying to kill all Jews.
Right.
He wanted them out of the country.
Reading these historical documents proves that there was no campaign to annihilate the Jewish people. That's pure
fiction. And even Netanyahu tells you that today.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
I love them using their own words against them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, please read on because at least down to the German Foreign Minister Konstantin, what he had to say.
Okay, I'm at. However, the in fact, is that where I am?
Yeah.
In fact, the Zionist faction had every reason to ensure permanence of National Socialist ideology in Germany. Klaus Polken, writing in a Journal of Palestine, in the Journal of Palestine Studies, "The Secret Contacts: Zionism and Nazi Germany, 1933 to 1941, JPS version 3 and 4. Version 3 and 4, spring and summer, 1976, claims that the moderate attitude of the Zionists was due to their vested interest in seeing the financial victory of National Socialism to force immigration to Palestine.
Okay, so this in other words, they needed the Germans to provide the excuse to get rid of the Jews. Okay, now remember, folks, that we just quoted you the Jewish boycott of German goods. All you ever hear about is how the Germans boycotted Jewish goods within Germany. That's all you ever hear about. You never hear about the opposite global Jewish boycott of German goods.
No, and they were dumping their dishes into like the, not the sea, but like rivers,
right,
in America. Like I remember Woolworths was one of them.
Oh,
they,
right,
they couldn't sell the
German,
goods, so they
German
dumped
dishes.
Them.
German dishes, yeah. So yeah, all you ever hear about is how the not, how it was evil Nazis, boycotting German Jewish stores in Germany. Evil Nazis. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Just remember what that's saying, Eli. They said that they want to get rid of Germany wholly. In other words, it's
that's
the same
right
thing. Germany must perish, right?
Amen.
It concurs with that. What to do with Germany, breeding them out and all, the Hutten plan, right?
Right.
But number two about this whole thing, let's just take it to today real quickly. What happens when we boycott Israel? When what's all the talk about these BDS sanctions? What happened because of these BDS sanctions, us boycotting Israeli products? Well, there was a bombing.
Yes.
And remember the bombing that happened over there in Europe, in Brussels?
Mm-hmm.
And it was admitted by the Jewish foreign minister that this was done because of the BDS sanctions, because of the boycott.
Yeah.
So the Jews can boycott anybody.
Right.
But remember I told you on this thing that in Spain, they just said that the people, they put a thing through that says that they cannot boycott the Israeli goods in Spain.
Right.
They have to buy it.
Right.
Remember
right,
we were laughing about that?
Yeah. Yeah.
So anybody can boycott, you know, the Jews can boycott anybody they wish to. But if somebody's to boycott the Jews, there'll be bombings.
That's right. There'll be assassinations. There'll be wars.
Yeah. Think okay about that, ladies yeah and gentlemen. Think about what's going on. See, this
think
relates from yesterday to today.
Yeah, yeah. But read the statement by the German foreign minister here.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
In the meantime, though, German foreign minister Konstantin von Neurath complained of the vilification campaign and said, "As concerned Jews, I can only say that their propagandists abroad are rendering their co-religionists in Germany no service by giving the German public, through their distorted and untruthful news about persecution and torture of Jews, the impression that they actually halt at nothing, not even at lies and calumny.
Calumny, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Calumny to fight the present German government."
Okay.
See, they're trying to get that. What he's saying, I think, here, and you can correct me, is they're trying to get their people out of there, and by boycotting, they're going to cause the Germans to have, you know, not have the wherewithal to get these people out of there. So they're working
yeah
against their own interests.
Well,
lies and everything else.
Exactly. They're
tell
lying.
Me what you think.
The Germans weren't persecuting Jews. It was only until after the Jews declared this global boycott of German goods that the Germans started boycotting Jewish stores. It was only, you know, nobody ever is told why the Germans started boycotting Jewish stores. They're never told that. Okay? It was the fault of the Zionists and this global boycott against German goods. You think, you know, let's say, okay, David, let's say global Jews boycott Boston, right? Jews declare boycott on Boston. Don't you think some Bostonites would get upset against the Jews and start boycotting Jewish goods in Boston?
I'm already upset right now and I'm boycotting.
Right? Right?
No, but you know, in reality, the thing is they don't, you can't respond in a normal fashion. Only they can do those things. You're just
right
an animal and
right
you're supposed to just take whatever they give you, but don't you ever talk back to those
right
wonderful people that Tex Mars talks about.
Right. Okay, so
Could I just read this part here?
Yes.
Because this says something. This is just reflecting today. This is today. We're going to go back in time, and you're going to see this is happening today. So the fledgling Hitler government itself was clearly trying to contain the growing tension within Germany,
mm-hmm,
both within Germany and without. In the United States, even the U.S. Secretary of State Cordell Hull wired Rabbi Stephen Wise, you know, the one who
mm-hmm
said that communism is Judaism.
That's right.
Okay. Of the American Jewish Congress and urged caution. Whereas there was for a short time considerable physical mistreatment of the Jews, this phase may be considered virtually terminated. A stabilization appears to have been reached in the field of personal mistreatment. I feel hopeful that the situation which has caused such widespread concern throughout this country will soon revert to normal.
Why?
Now listen to this.
Yeah, well, let me just comment here real quick. Oh, because the Germans wanted to get rid of the Jews, and the Zionists wanted the Jews to relocate to Palestine. It was I scratch your back, you scratch mine.
That's
back
right.
To you.
And that's not a bad thing because Germany wanted to get the Jews out of Germany.
That's right.
So why not just do it?
Exactly. And get paid for it. They were being paid 2,000 marks per Jew.
But it also shows you the lie that Germany had an intention to kill all
right.
Jews. Why would they let them out if they wanted to kill them all?
Exactly. Yeah, if you can make money selling Jews, why wouldn't you kill them? Right? Folks, I hope you're getting the idea that all of the stuff you've been taught about World War II, the anti-Nazi, anti-German propaganda, is pure BS. Pure BS.
Yeah,
please
continue.
Yeah,
when you tell people that, they just can't seem to conceive it or believe it. But when you prove it out to them, there's got to be a portion of these people out here that are finally going to say, wow.
Yeah,
I'm stunned.
I never knew.
I can't believe it.
Right?
You know, a lot of people see Hellstorm, the movie, and they finally realize, there's another side to the story?
All right. Oh, there's another two sides to a story? All they've ever been hearing is the Jewish side.
Yeah, the Jew side.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so just a little more here, because listen to this right here. Despite all this, the leaders of Jewish community refused to relent. On March 27th, there were simultaneous protest rallies at Madison Square Garden in Chicago, Boston, Philadelphia, Baltimore, Cleveland, and 70 other locations. The New York rally. Now, do we see this happening today about Donald Trump? Are we watching the rallies?
Yeah. Jews orchestrating
across
against
the nation?
Donald Trump. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's happening, folks. History's repeating itself.
So the New York rally was broadcast worldwide. Of course, they had the media to really pump it up, and it shows you this paper saying the Daily News, 40,000 roar protest here against Hitler.
Yeah.
So the bottom line is that the new Germany was declared to be an enemy of Jewish interests and thus needed to be economically strangled. This was before Hitler decided to boycott Jewish goods.
There you go. There you go. Okay. The German boycott of Jewish goods followed the Jewish boycott of Germany. Nobody's ever told that.
But understand the words there, Jewish interests.
That's
America
right.
is against Jewish interests.
Rightfully,
now the UN is starting to be against Jewish interests. So anybody that in this world that is against Jewish interests, they need to be economically strangled. Does that happen today?
Yeah.
Are there sanctions against certain countries like Iran?
Right.
Hmm?
Right. Yeah.
Has anything changed?
Right.
No.
Let me read.
Anybody
that's
against Jewish interests needs to be economically strangled. I want you to remember that.
Right.
That's the last thing I need to say.
Yeah, right. And we still haven't got to really detailing Churchill's involvement in World War II, but I think we've proven the point. But this article.
All right, we'll
is
come
so
back
good.
To this next week or something.
Right.
I just.
Well,
I
next week
resist.
Is going to be Dresden. Okay.
Oh, right.
So,
right. Well, in the future.
Yeah. But let me have the honor of reading.
Churchill?
You know, let me have the honor of reading Hitler's statement here. Regarding all this situation. He states, a speech on March 28th the same year, now that the domestic enemies of the nation have been eliminated by the folk itself, what we have long been waiting for will not come to pass. The communist and Marxist criminals and their Jewish intellectual instigators, who having made off with their capital stocks across the border in the nick of time, are now unfolding an unscrupulous treasonous campaign of agitation against the German folk or people as a whole from there, from outside of Germany. Lie, and what have we been saying? The Jews, international Jews from outside of Germany, and traitor Jews within Germany instigated the Weimar Republic and the genocide of the German people therein. Lies and slander of positively hair-raising perversity are being launched about Germany. horror stories of dismembered Jewish corpses, gouged out eyes, and hacked off hands. There's your hacked off hands again. Are circulating.
But the gouged off eyes. Let me just stop you right there.
Right?
Remember with the Poland thing? That, right. I mean, killing Germans.
Right.
And in those stories, they gouged out the eyes of the Germans.
Yes. And then are circulating for the purpose of defaming the German folk in the world for the second time. Just as they had succeeded in doing once before in 1914. Folks, I hope you're getting the hint here that, as we've been telling you, both World War I and World War II were orchestrated by the international Jew, and Germany was the demonized nation, the demagogue, branded a demagogue by the international Jew, when in fact it's the Jews that are the demagogue, and the German people and Adolf Hitler are the innocent victims of Jewish propaganda, not vice versa.
And this needs to be done because Germany is against the interests of Israel. Of the Jews.
Right, of the Jews.
Okay, if you're against the Jewish interests, we need to strangle you to death.
Right. So, it's amazing. Once you hear the other side of the story and realize how the Jews have been lying about the German people for the last 100 or more years, it's incredible, folks. You just cannot comprehend. I have to, his words here are brilliant. Positively hair-raising perversity. These are the lies perpetrated by the Jews. Hair-raising perversity of Jewish lies is what we're dealing with.
Well, there will come a time in the near future where all of us will boycott Israel and boycott Jews in total.
Yeah.
So they better get ready for that, because they're going to try to have to strangle the whole world at once.
Right. But I think let's get back to Winston Churchill, because we have been demonstrating how Winston Churchill was a tool of the Jews, just as Woodrow Wilson was a tool of the Jews, and just as federal dictator Rosenfeld was a tool of the Jews. I'd like to switch to Rents.com. Winston Churchill, Illuminati, London Bombing in Perspective. Okay, and let me copy and paste this so you have quick access to it. All right.
I already have it.
You have it.
I thought we were going to get to the other one, but that's okay.
But just quickly here. Winston Churchill, Illuminati, London Bombing in Perspective, by Henry Mackow, who was himself Jewish. If the 1940-41 London Blitz is any indication, the recent terror bombings are contrived. The first air raid on London by the Nazis took place September 7, 1940, and killed 306 people. After touring the ruins, Winston Churchill remarked, quote, "They cheered me as if I'd given them victory instead of getting their houses bombed to bits." What a cynical statement that is. Right? Churchill is telling the truth. Unknown to Londoners, he had rejected Hitler's proposal to spare civilian targets. Quite the opposite, he goaded Hitler into bombing London by hitting Berlin and other civilian targets first. Do you hear me, folks? First, it was Churchill that bombed civilian targets in Germany. All you ever hear about is the German Blitzkrieg. You never hear about the fact that it was Churchill that ordered civilian targets bombed first. Churchill told his air marshal, quote, "Never mistreat an enemy by halves," and instructed his cabinet, "Bombing of military objectives, increasingly widely interpreted, seems to be our best road at home at present." He blocked the Red Cross from monitoring civilian casualties. Okay? And then he described the Second World War as the most unnecessary war in history, yet he's the one most responsible for it. Can you imagine?
The hypocrisy of the Jews.
Yeah, and Churchill. The utter hypocrisy of Winston Churchill. It's amazing, folks. But I just wanted to read that from this article. And so go ahead to the one you wanted to quote.
Notice again, he blocked the Red Cross from monitoring civilian casualties.
Right.
In other words, that is very, very against the Geneva Convention. It's against everything. Notice that the Allies, who were supposedly good, did not obey the Geneva Convention in their treatment of war criminals, or so-called war criminals.
Yeah.
But notice how Germany did. We talked about this before. Notice how today these same good allies are torturing people and not obeying the the you understand, they're calling everybody else evil when in fact they are the evil. And that includes America because it's Jew controlled.
Yes, yes.
Now, don't be mad at me and say I'm anti-American for saying that. As I've said before, you have to call it for what it is. We saw that Germany, who was said to be the most evil people on the planet, they stuck by those things and they treated their prisoners correctly.
That's right. That's right.
Okay? But we see the ones that instituted the whole Geneva Convention to make sure that the treatment of war captives was abused.
Right.
Just like it was abused in the Civil War. Okay?
Yeah.
So anyway, this other article here is kind of important. It's called Did Winston Churchill Start World War II?
Okay.
It starts out with a Hitler quote. It says, I understand if I attack the West, the Poles will honor their commitments to their allies and attack us. That is why I have decided to attack Poland. That was Adolf Hitler, 22 August 1939, Berchtesgaden Officers Conference. So it says, I'm going to go briefly through just some of this. No serious thinker who wishes to truly understand the Second World War can do so without two books, London Nihilists and Green Eyes. Sadly, of course, pay attention to this, ladies and gentlemen. Sadly, most serious thinkers will have to do without them because they are only available in Polish. How quaint.
Right.
And absolutely no one is in much of a rush to translate them into English. Their author, Stanislaw Kat-Makowicz, was the premier conservative man of letters and statesman in interbellum Poland. In his youth, he was a cavalry officer who fought during World War I in Belarus, and an aristocrat born in St. Petersburg and leader of the Vilnius Old Guard Conservatives. Kat was the very best that Poland had to offer. He was the most intelligent political thinker of his age, adopting his pen name Kat from Kipling's poem about the cat that walked by himself. Hmm. Makowicz lived up to the archetype. So in other words, this guy is a brilliant writer, a brilliant man, and they don't want to translate his books.
Uh-huh,
what does
right.
that tell you about his books?
That's right. They're too accurate.
As a statesman. Mm-hmm. All right, go ahead.
Well, yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just saying his books are so accurate, the West cannot afford, the Jewish-controlled West cannot afford to have these books published.
Well, we need to find some brothers in Poland that will take
That's
on this
right.
task.
Amen. Amen, we do.
Okay, so as a statesman, his greatest achievement was the organization of a grand conference between Polish socialist dictator Marshal Joseph Pilsudski and the Polish nobility following the May 26 coup d'etat. Kat's goal in organizing the conference was to secure Poland against any extreme forms of socialism. Uh-huh. His greatest triumph as a matter of the influence was the conclusion of the Polish-German non-aggression pact of 1934, a policy he argued for in earnest as editor-in-chief of the conservative journal The Word. Following the death of Marshal Pilsudski and the rapid deterioration of Polish-German relations under Foreign Minister Beck, I think I know what that means,
yeah, right.
and his dictatorship without a dictator, Kat was arrested and imprisoned by the Polish Sanitation for his staunch opposition to the government's
okay.
policy. So
and
obviously my inclinations right. about Mr. Beck
right.
are correct.
So what were the policies? They were following the prescribed policies of Jew-controlled Britain to instigate war with Germany. Okay. And so Kat-Makowicz was trying to avoid war with Germany. Okay. So we never hear about all of the people that are working very hard to avoid war, avoid World War II. We never hear about those people. All we ever hear about is Germany is evil, Nazis are evil, Hitler is evil, blah, 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 blah. That's all we ever hear.
One side of the story.
Yeah.
One side of the story.
Yeah. Back to you.
Yeah. Well, let's move down in this article because we don't have the time to read it all. So Kat was the principal anti-communist of his generation, both in terms of his political opinions and his heritage. Those who accuse him of becoming a useful idiot, it should say an useful idiot, yeah, for right. Stalin are themselves useless idiots for Poland who demonstrate their ignorance of the essence of conservative thought. Kat means to prove it. His argument laid out in two books can be summarized in a few taut sentences. Kat argues this: Great Britain, as a world empire, has always fought every continental power that demonstrated real potential for attaining the status of a rival to British imperialism. Thus, England fought Spain or France, and with the rise of a strong German nation state in the late, 19th century?
Yes.
Yep, England would fight Germany. England never fought continental wars alone, always in a coalition. Hello,
yeah, right.
Coalition. Do you remember the coalition right. in Iraq?
Right. right.
England only fought colonial wars alone and lost only one in the last 250 years to General George Washington. England fought colonial wars. Well, didn't they lose the War of 1812 against yes. General Jackson?
Yes, they did. Yes.
My favorite president?
Yeah,
yes.
Well, he forgot
so that's,
about that.
That's incorrect yeah. in a sense, okay. but whatever. Right. England fought colonial wars alone against inferior peoples, often using these peoples as cannon fodder in order to limit. Doesn't that sound like the Jew?
Yeah,
what the Jew does?
Right. Exactly.
To limit the amount of English bloodshed. England fought continental wars in coalitions, recognizing that continental rivals were not inferior and required different means to tame. England endeavored never to fight first, but to let others bleed and then fight last in order to dictate terms as the strongest party.
And to claim innocence, right? And to claim innocence.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well,
you started it. You started
yeah,
it.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah. Let's see what it says. Since 1863, England has used the Polish question to aggravate its continental rivals. The British war guarantee to Poland in 1939 was one in a long line of guarantees and declarations misunderstood by Poles as a sign of friendship.
Right? Haven't we been saying this? That the Poles were duped by the Jew-controlled yep. British?
Yes.
And accepted the British protectorate, and that was a lie? Wow.
In point of fact, England desired a war between Nazi Germany and the Soviet Union in order to reduce these potential rivals for world domination to containable portions.
Isn't that the premise of Hellstorm?
Yeah, but is it not the premise of what Mr. Another Jew said, the one who took over for Roosevelt, Mr.
Right.
Truman? Remember
mm-hmm.
I told you? If you look it up, ladies and gentlemen, there's a quote of his
yeah.
in a newspaper where he said, I don't care if the Germans win or if the Russians win, just as long as many of them die as possible.
Right.
Yeah. How do you like that? So
yeah.
Poland stood in the way of this British ambition. Thus, England endeavored to eliminate Poland by all means possible in order to create a Nazi-Soviet border in hopes of bringing about a Nazi-Soviet war. See, they're using
right.
Poland as a pawn.
Right.
And what did happen to them? Now, they promised they'd protect them, but Germany attacked him on one side, and Russia attacked him on the other side. Thus, Poland became half communist after the war, or
right.
totally communist
totally
after
communist.
The war.
Yes.
And there you have it. Now there was a Russian border on Germany. Hello.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Yeah. yeah. Jewish instigation everywhere. You can't escape
yeah.
it. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's you know, when you're saying the British Empire,
yeah.
that's the visible.
Right.
When you're saying yeah. when you're saying
the Bank
the
of
Jews,
England,
that's the invisible.
That's right. Bank of England. Right? Pulling all the strings,
England,
the Rothschilds.
Yeah. England, particularly Winston Churchill, not Nazi Germany or Soviet Russia, is to blame for the invasion and destruction of Poland. Now,
all
remember
right.
we just told
a
you.
True statement.
Remember we just told you that he was paid by a Jew through a focus group,
right?
To, even before he was prime minister, to keep on beating the drum wars of Germany,
right.
like McCain
That's
today.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So Kat's thesis appears to us at the end of revisionism, but it cannot qualify as revisionist history because it was written immediately after the after World War II by a man whose political experience cannot be questioned, even if his conclusions are suspect or shocking.
No, he knew what was going on. He understood what was going on. He wrote the truth about it.
A little further on, it says this. Kat notes that Adolf Hitler had no vast designs against Poland, that his principal enemies were France and England in particular. German designs on France and England were motivated by a desire to avenge Versailles. Mm. And justifiably so.
And justifiably so.
To restore lands populated by Germans to Germany and to challenge Britain for a world empire. Remember what I just said to you, that Germany was the last bastion of Europe, last one that could go against the Jews. The British Empire is under the control of the Jews at this point through the bank because of Rothschild, and they're in control of America. So the only one left, France is also under control, and Russia is also under control. So the only one left that could defend the Israelite nations is Germany, the tribe of Judah.
Right.
That's the whole motivation. That's the truest motivation of it all.
Well, the external motivation was for the Jews to gain control of Palestine through their false impersonation of Israel, but secondly, to exterminate as many white people in these world wars as possible. Okay? That's what World War I and II were about. In fact, all modern wars have been about Jewish attempts to exterminate the white race. That's all they've been about.
And to get that little land.
Right.
See, notice that, remember, well, let's do a little recap here, which blows me away. When I tell people this, they get shocked about it too. The five-year period, 1913 to 1918, what goes on in that five-year period? Number one, 1913 sets up the Central Bank in America, which will enable World War I. Without it, World War I will not fly. Number two, while World War I's going on, they take down the Armenian Empire. It's their sick man. They've sucked everything they can out of it. They offer to buy the little land of Palestine, and they are refused to buy it. So therefore, they just totally destroy it. And Freemasonry's involved in that whole thing. This is while everybody's eyes are on World War One. And then they finally, the Rothschilds, finally get their revenge on the Tsar in Russia, who's just happens to be the richest man in the world and has a lot of his money in their banks.
Yes. I have to back up to the previous paragraph because this demonstrates how cynically the Jews exploit nationalities and set one nation against the other. Okay. Kat's thesis appears to us as the height of revisionism. You may have read this.
Yeah, I read that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yet these conclusions are not the stuff of ad hoc fantasies, but careful historical analysis of facts. To understand these facts, it is necessary to recognize the key factor which allowed British intrigue to turn Hitler's guns on Poland in 1939. Polish stupidity manifested. Now, this is a Polish author saying this. Polish stupidity manifested, as Kat explains, in the Polish view of war rooted in the Middle Ages notion of an honorable duel between knights. Poles, when their honor is challenged, are simply incapable of refusing a fight, a psychological trait that can be easily used by an enemy to goad them into a fight. Kat has no remorse for his motherland, which he loves with all his heart. He explicitly argues that Polish foreign policy leading up to World War II might as well have been conducted by a 12-year-old girl for all the idiocy demonstrated by the Polish government under Beck. All right, I maintain it's
Beck
not
being a Jew. He has to be a Jew because he put him in prison.
That's right. Okay, so it's not stupidity. Kat's wrong about that. It's Jewish intrigue. It's Jewish manipulation of Polish politicians that caused Poland to have its cynically and merciless anti-German policy.
and only an internationalist that has lived in the land of Poland would know how to know their faults and their That's weaknesses right. and know exactly. how to manipulate them. So this is the advantage the international Jew has had against the Israelite nations, you must realize. Let me read this part of this. And while I'm reading, it's a lot. It's down where a picture of Hitler is.
Okay.
You may look up above and decide that's pretty good, too. But here's what it says. To secure his interests, Hitler undertook significant efforts in 1938, here it is again, seeking a diplomatic solution with Poland. He offered to build a highway linking the Reich, Poland, and East Prussia. This proposal would not only have achieved the immediate goals of the German national interest, which called for the linking of Germanic peoples of Prussia with their fellows in the Reich, it would have also increased commerce between Germany, Poland, and East Prussia.
It would have been good for Poland. It would have been good for Poland. Yeah.
But that might have been against Jewish interests, too.
There you go.
Well, they would have got right over there and got a hold of that anyway.
Sure, right,
so
yeah.
They would have, I'm sure they would have taken care of that.
They would have been middlemen.
They were right in Poland anyway, right?
Right, exactly.
So it said, this could have mitigated the probability of a future war. Finally, given the immediate problem of Polish military weakness relative to German strength, a Polish-German agreement to build a highway from the Reich through Poland to East Prussia would clearly make German military aggression against Poland practically impossible in the immediate short term because Germany would not attack a country where German engineers and workers were building a mass transportation system.
There you go.
Very good.
There you go. Excellent point. Excellent.
So, so from the point of view of long-term Polish national interests, full Polish control of the Baltic port city of Danzig was seen as a key to Poland's capacity to excel economically. Many Poles considered Poland to legitimately encompass the geographical landmass between the Black Sea and the Baltic Seas.
Wow.
Potential access to the Black Sea had been lost with the conclusion of the Treaty of Riga between Poland, Soviet Ukraine, and Soviet Russia. The loss of Danzig to Germany would be a major blow to Polish national interest. Unlike the highway from Germany to East Russia, if any gain could be had for Poland on the account of the loss of Danzig, this loss may have well also rekindled the fires of German claims to Silesia. Here, Kat lectures his countrymen on the fundamentals of political science. Kat notes that national interest in the foreign policy cannot be pursued by a nation state with a weak army.
There you go.
No foreign policy is really possible without military strength. Poland could not defeat Germany in war, but Hitler himself knew that controlling Poland would carry both cost and risk with it, as far above the cost and risk of confronting Czechoslovakia. Poland could have negotiated a settlement with Germany that spared Germany the cost and risk of war while sparing Poland the cost and risk of annihilation.
Yeah.
See, if they had obeyed that instead of obeying the Jews, again, here we are. But we've got a guy named Beck in the country at this point. So now we've got the Jewish kingpin that is going to make sure that this doesn't happen.
Yes.
See what I'm saying? So there's your problem there. If Poland could have done this negotiation, it would have been good for Germany. It would have been good for Poland. And it would have prevented the war. They would have had to do something else. In other words, that would have checkmated that for a while.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That Hitler wanted war with Poland is utter myth. Hitler attempted to resolve the Polish question with brutal diplomacy. This brutality was made evident when, as Kat notes, Hitler began to publicly acknowledge and greet the Soviet ambassador in Berlin, while at the same time feasting with Polish foreign minister and de facto ruler Joseph Beck. Hitler was clearly pressuring Beck, agree to my terms or I will conclude a separate treaty with the Soviet Union to secure Germany's eastern flank. Now, if Beck were a real Pole, he would have seen this and agreed to Hitler's terms. Nevertheless, Beck shunned Hitler's terms and sided with Britain.
Sided with his Jew behind that is behind this Freemason Jew. Remember, his name is Sir, right?
Right.
He's the one that funded the other Jew to do this, the Jew we're talking about here. So basically, Churchill. Here's what the result is. Since they wouldn't listen, Poland gets absolutely crushed. Then it becomes a Soviet territory, and the Katyn Forest event happens, and all of the – I'm sure Mr. Beck wasn't in there. I'd like to know if he was in that, in the death list of the Katyn Forest. I somehow doubt that he is. Mm-hmm. All the intellectuals, all the military leaders, all the rich cats of people like Kat here – were taken out to the Katyn Forest and killed by the Russians, and then it was blamed on the Germans. So it was in their interest to do that legislation with Germany, because if they didn't, they were going to be crushed, correct?
Right. Again, the real cause of the war was Jewish-British goading of Poland against Germany, okay? And the German had absolute right to remember, Danzig was composed of 98% Germans.
97, it said, but that's okay.
Oh,
don't worry.
Okay. Sorry, I'm one percentage point off.
Well, I want you to be politically correct and percentage correct.
It's a German city, folks. It's a German city stolen from Germany by the Jews of the Versailles Treaty.
But why was it done? That was an orchestration. Mm-hmm. It was deliberately done to aggravate Germany. They knew that sooner or later Germany would have to build up again and go against this,
and then get
their world war again so they could kill as many of them as possible.
And let's
go back.
So there's
your answer.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. Let's go
there's
back.
There's your answer of why they would fund Germany where they got the money from, the Jews.
Right.
Yeah, see, the Jews would fund Hitler.
Right?
You're not looking at Hitler as like working with them like to against the German people.
Right.
They just funded them because they wanted them to go to war. It was
an
orchestration.
Right. And remember the Zionists were using Germany to expel Jews from Germany and later from other countries so that it could populate Palestine with Jews. Again, the Palestine aggravation or invasion by the Jews is of immense significance here, as it was in World War I. Okay? That policy was begun with the Balfour Declaration in World War I, and it was continued with the transfer agreement that Zionists had with Germany during World War II, or even before World War II. Okay? You're never told anything about the Balfour Declaration or the transfer agreement, and which, again, Germany was manipulated by the Jews just as Poland was manipulated by the Jews. Okay.
Yes, because they wanted to ensure that Germany would go to war.
That's right.
They wanted to make sure. See, there's your control of both sides in a sense, right? Even though they didn't control Germany, they gave their money to make sure. They gave it in England to Churchill to make sure he'd beat the war drums. They made sure that they had Beck over there to say no to Hitler. And they made sure that Hitler had plenty of money that he could get all his uniforms and get all his stuff together so that this would be a for sure thing.
Right. Well, don't forget, the Jews were pretty much convinced of American involvement in World War II should they be needed, thanks to Jusenfeld. Okay? And just as America bailed out the Jewish coalition against Germany during World War I, with Wilson bringing American troops in, which they absolutely had to have because Germany actually won that war, World War I. Germany actually won World War I. France had capitulated, Russia had bowed out, and Britain was on the verge of bankruptcy. Without the Zionists bringing America into World War I, Germany would have won World War I conclusively.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Do you know? I don't know the answer to this. I know that the Ottoman Empire was Germany's ally, deliberately, of course, while they were a sick man. Okay, but in World War II, were they still part of that? I think they must have been, but they didn't fight any war because they were sucked dry by the Jews.
Yeah.
Admittedly, by Jacob Schiff, right?
The Ottoman
Empire.
Were
they part of the Allies? I mean, of the evil Axis?
Not during World War II. No, the supposed ally of Germany was Italy, and Italy was no ally of Germany.
So,
Yeah.
Okay, so they weren't in the war, but so England had control of Palestine. So yes. That's when the Balfour, I don't know what year the Balfour Declaration was put out, but we should discuss that in the future. 1916,
just before the end of World War One, they had to, there was a Jewish guarantee to the British that they would bring America into the war. Because the Jews had invested so many billions of dollars against Germany that they couldn't afford to lose. They had to bring America into World War One to recoup their losses.
They say that's written cryptically, and it is funny when you look at it. It's funny worded. It's not. It's kind of like lawyer talk in a way. So be some.
Oh yeah, yeah. The Balfour. Yeah. Well, we've run out of time, folks. I hope you've enjoyed our elucidation of true history and how the Jews have maneuvered Germany for genocide in two world wars. That's the reality of the Jews versus Germany. Thanks for listening. Thanks, David. Good show.
Thank you.
And next week we're going to talk about Dresden. We'll tell the story of Jews versus Germany again after that. Of course, this is part of the Jewish British saturation bombing of Dresden was one of history's most atrocious. Incidents. Thanks for listening.
The true Holocaust.
A true Holocaust. Thank you.
When you're riding after rattlesnakes, you